Welcome to our first half 2022 results presentation, and thanks for joining us today. As said, I'm Alexandre Arteta. I'm President and CEO of the company, and today together with me, Luis Mari Pérez, Managing Director of the company, and Ixone Vicente, CFO of Arteta. Well, before starting, I'm happy to share with you that last June we celebrate our first year as a listed company. This is a very important milestone in our 75 years history. Now being a listed company, this reinforce our commitment on creating value for the shareholders. Well, let's go with the presentation. I will start with a global view of the highlights of this first half of the year, and then Luis and Ixone will explain in detail the financials. Going to page three. First of all, we generate earnings per share of 0.05, which is 57% higher than last year in this same period. This is a result of higher sales volume and also disciplined financial management. Order intakes grew up to 192 million euros, which is going really well. It's more than 50% higher than same period last year, and also above the expected market growth. This shows the good moment of the market and also a good position, market position and commercial strategy in order to take advantage of this good moment. Revenue also grew 21% versus previous last year, and it goes up to 156 million euros, despite the supply chain disruption and COVID issues that still remain in some countries. It's important to you will see there that there's a difference, that we have an important backlog that we will see in the coming months. As I said, despite this supply chain constraint and also inflation, we managed to reach 13.1 million euros EBITDA this year, increasing the EBITDA from previous years with 23%, previous half last year. Also, which is important, the margin improved a little bit from previous year and go up to 8.4% of revenues, which is also a result of the volume and also the margin recovery strategy that we are following very with very center. Debt net stood at 54 million euros, which is equivalent to a leverage of 1.9 ratio EBITDA, debt net EBITDA, versus 1.95 at December last year, which also shows the financial management that we are doing with the company. Last but not least, the inorganic growth, which is a key line in our strategic plan, is on track. Last year, since the IPO, we announced three transactions. All of them, they are running. The last one, which was announced in December last year, was which is a JV with Hitachi Energy, with the focus of becoming the leaders in the Ecogas insulated transformers, is now closed since May this year. Now it's running. All of them, they are running well, and even synergies are ahead of what we expected or predicted at the beginning. Looking forward, we're still working on new operation, new transactions. We have a pipeline which is actually under analysis, and it's in line with the strategic goal that we have. In the next page, you have a resume of these numbers. We have already seen these numbers. I'm not going to go through them. The only comment is regarding the order intake. It remains strong during this good Q3 of the year. It looks the market is still strong, so we have a potential to grow for the future. You see here the net profit, which was not shown in the previous slide. It's reached 3 million euros, which is 77% higher than the same period last year. This is equivalent to the 0.05 euros per share. With this quick view of the first half, I will turn the word to Luis Mari to walk through the rest of the presentation.
Thanks, Alex, and good morning to everybody. Before we jump into the numbers, I would like to extend a big thank you to the Arteta team, because in these difficult times, their commitment makes a difference. What you can see in this slide, we can take a look at order intake and revenues. Okay, so on the left side we have the order intake, on the right side we have the revenues. Okay, market trends remain strong. So all the trends about electrification, decarbonization, digitization, and all that, they are playing to our advantage. Okay, this is why you can see that in our four regions. Let me remind you that we are organized in four regions: Europe, Middle East, Africa, North America, Latin America, and Asia Pacific. All four regions are growing, okay, and both in orders and sales. If you take a look at the orders first, you know, you will see that we have double-digit growth all across the globe. Okay, and just to give a little bit of a highlight, region by region, in the case of Europe, Middle East, Africa, I would like to point out that the renewable market in Southern Europe, Spain, Portugal, is really, really, really hot, let me say. Also, very important, after a few years of not a lot of activity, Saudi Arabia finally is investing quite a lot in high voltage, so we are benefiting from that as well. North America is booming, especially U.S., after the new policies in terms of renewables from the Biden administration. We have seen huge growth. You can see 78% and only 17% in sales, because these products are typically long cycle, okay? Good situation with Mexico as well, with some frame agreements that we have won over the first half of the year. Moving to South America, we can say that we have recovered from most of the effects that we were suffering in Brazil, Chile, and Argentina. So we can see the same trend even in Q3, in these 2 months of Q3, July and August. Things are improving. And finally, in Asia Pacific, even though China's situation is still challenging because of COVID, we are seeing some good activity in countries like Vietnam, Laos, Pakistan, and Philippines. And as I was saying before, situation in the third quarter, in the first 2 months of the third quarter, remains similarly. So market is going to be strong, most likely for all year long. Moving to the next page, we can take a look at the seasonality of our growth, of our revenue. What you can see here is that Q2 has been much better than Q1 in terms of growth. Okay, we are talking about 33% almost of growth in Q2 in comparison with 9% in Q1. If you take a look at what has happened in previous years in terms of relative size of the volume by quarter, you will see that the Q4 is typically the biggest in terms of size. So based on this, we predict that the volume is there for this year, and we are not going to have any major issue in terms of reaching our goals. And we will discuss later on in the last slide about this, okay? So positive in terms of growth. Now we're going to take a look at our situation from the product line point of view. So we have talked about geographies. Now we are going to be talking about products. Probably you will remind from other conferences that we are organized in three pillars. The first pillar is what we call measurement and monitoring systems, which are instrument transformers, mainly all the different technologies. Second one is transmission and distribution grid automation, typically electronics. And the third one is network reliability, primary equipment, including capacitor banks, enclosures, and other services. So the good news is that the three pillars are showing positive growth and double digits. So very nice picture to share with you. One thing to consider is that in the first pillar, the bigger one, the measurement and monitoring systems, the one with the 25% growth, here we are including the inorganic acquisitions from last year, CITAS. So if we exclude the CITAS from this picture, I would say that half of the growth is coming organically, half of the growth is coming inorganically, okay? Just to give a few hints about what we are doing in each of the three pillars without entering in details, in the pillar of measurement and monitoring, we have beaten the expected growth in our plan. Okay. There's a lot of activity about eco-friendly products, so we are investing quite heavily in all kinds of technologies that provide better carbon footprint. The integration of CITAS is going extremely well, so it has been received very well by the market, and very successful. In the case of the second pillar, grid automation, we have achieved approvals in several countries in Asia after a couple of years of working homologations. And finally, about network reliability, well, I already pointed out Brazil, which is our biggest market for reclosure, is back after COVID. And, you know, our new plant is up to speed in terms of deliveries, okay? I'm going to shift gears now, and I'm going to be talking about direct margin, okay? Direct margin has been a hot topic in previous presentations. You guys remember we have been talking about raw material increases, logistics increases, and what actions we are going to be taking in order to counteract those situations. What you can see in the slide on the left side, you can see a change of trend that took place in the months of March and April. In that change of trend I was referring, we can see that the margin is picking up. And this is because of all the actions that we have been taking in terms of achieving productivity, cost out, and price recovery. You can have more details on the right side of the page, where we have the waterfall on margin comparing the direct margin for the first half of 21 to the second half of 22. You see that the volume is helping us, of course. Sales mix is hurting a little bit. Exchange rate between the currencies is also helping a little bit. And then I would like to draw your attention to the last two columns, the one on material and logistic cost increases and the one on price recovery. If you remember, back in December 21st, the ratio between the recovery and the cost increases was probably around 40%. So we could only recover like 40% of the cost increases. Now we're talking about 70%, and before the end of Q4, we're going to be at 100%. So in other words, all the actions that we have been taking in terms of, achieving price increases from the market, in terms of doing cost out reductions, in terms of suppliers, in terms of logistics, are paying back, and we are starting to see in our profit and loss statement. As a consequence of this, EBITDA, Alex already mentioned it, EBITDA has increased at 23% in comparison with the previous year. Just to give a little bit of perspective, back in 2021, full year, our EBITDA was 9.3%. So 8.3% in the first half, full year 9.3. So second half is a little bit stronger in terms of EBITDA creation. If I go 1 year back, 2020, EBITDA was 11.3 full year, 8.3 first half, 11.3 in the full year. So what we're seeing here is 8.4% in the first half, a little bit better than both 2020 and 2021, and our expectations is that it's going to improve a little bit as well in the second half of the year. What are going to be, we'll talk about in the last page, okay? And now I'm going to hand the presentation to our CFO, Ixone, so yours.
Thank you, Ismael. On page 10, we saw a bridge that goes from the EBIT to the net income, and it shows the improvement in the different lines of the profit and loss accounts, financial results, income tax, reaching a net profit of 3 million euros, which grows 77% comparing with previous year. This means earning per share of 0.05 euros. I would like to remind you that last July, we remunerated our shareholders. We distributed a dividend amounting to 2.5 million euros, which is a 30% payout of last year's result. Turning to next page 11, we have here the net financial debt. The first thing I would like to remark is the leverage ratio improvement that goes from 1.95 last year to 1.9 times EBITDA at June 2022. On absolute terms, the net EBITDA at June 2022 was 554.3 million euros. And here we have a waterfall that explains the variation. Starting with the reported EBITDA, which is 13.1 million euros, one of the most important negative cash outflow is the CapEx. We have here the operating maintenance CapEx that is less than 3% of our revenues, in line with our guidance. Then we have the financial results, which are improving comparing with last year. They represent 1.2% of our revenues, as well as tax expenses that are equivalent to 1%. Then we have the working capital. Working capital requirement has been higher than a year ago, and the main reason are the inventories. The last 18 months, we've been working in a difficult and extraordinary economic environment, and we have increased our inventory levels in order not to disturb the supply chain of our customers and to avoid stops in our factory productions. The second half of the year, we have a clear focus on cash flow generation, especially looking to the inventory levels. And to finish with the waterfall, we have the positive impact of the exchange rate and the negative cash flow coming from the inorganic operation. Here we have the second payment of Cetac and the positive cash flow of the joint venture with Hitachi Energy. In the right side, we have the gross financial debt breakdown by sources. We've been working last years to reinforce our debt balance sheet and also in the diversification of our financial sources, as you can see in the chart. It's important to remark also that the 70% of our total long-term loans are hedged against the risk interest rate. And finally, our debt financial position has been reinforced during this half of the year, maintaining a leverage ratio of 2.5, less than 2.5. And now I will return the word to Luis Mari to continue with the presentation.
Thanks, Ixone. So now we're going to talk about our ESG strategy. You have heard us saying many times that ESG is deep into our DNA, and we are working on these kind of activities for many years, maybe with different terminology, but with the same principles. And I'm going to give you a little bit of summary about what we have done in these 6 months. So in terms of environment, we have been working hard in terms of reducing the greenhouse gases emissions. We also have invested quite a lot of time in reducing our energy consumption, so especially nowadays, with the price of electricity and gas, this pays back quickly. And also we have launched initiatives to reduce our waste. Okay? I would like to remark that we have received an award in order of in terms of designing our R&D products with some bio-friendly gases, okay, and liquids. Socially, we are working hard on trying to increase the percentage of female hired. As you can imagine, our industry, electrical engineering, there's a lot of male components, okay? And there's room for improvement, but we're working on reducing that gap. Also, we have increased the number of women in management positions, 2%, and we have worked as well on the turnover rate of our employees in order to reduce the unwanted leaves. We finalized with a big success the Solidarity Run. You may recall the idea is to help some disadvantaged families paying the electricity bill, and we had 720 participants in 20 countries. We would like to thank our supporters that you can see them in at the bottom of the page. Finally, in terms of governance, we are working on the internal controls. We have launched our 2030 sustainability roadmap, We have also finalized our corporate governance roadmap, and we have finally introduced all the risk management, not only at functional level, but also at regional level. So that is really now embedded into our processes. Finally, we also received two sustainability awards, on good governance and in the energy sector. So very, very interesting, very active first half of the year. Okay, so now we're talking about future, right? So until now we have been talking about what has happened. We are providing all the explanations, details, financials, metrics, KPIs, all that. Now we have to tell you how do we see the rest of the year. What you can see in the slide is, first of all, we are talking about revenue and EBITDA. We are talking about what has happened in 2021, what is happening in the last 12 months in the column in the middle, and what is our outlook for the full year. And keeping into consideration that there's a lot of volatility and uncertainty nowadays, we are giving a little bit of a range, okay, of what's going to happen, okay? Highlights. So first of all, you have heard us saying that the market is very strong. Just read the news, countries and companies are investing more in electricity, interconnections, decarbonization, so all those things are good for our future business. Our position, our footprint is well aligned with these needs because geographically we are located all over the place. And because we're doing the right things in terms of product development and commercial activities. So that's good. Our model is resilient. So finally, after, a lot of months of hard work, we're starting to see the results of our price recovery actions. First, we saw it in the short cycle product lines, like relays and medium voltage. And finally, now we are seeing it as well in the high voltage. Also, the cost-saving activities with the change of logistics from Asia to Europe and some of the changes that we have implemented in the design of the products are working to our advantage. On the negative side, still there are some supply chain disruptions. Electronics are critical nowadays, energy, logistics, COVID in China. So still there's a little bit of a degree that make us have a little bit of a wide range in terms of our outlook. But what you can see in the slide is, in terms of volume, something between 325 to 340. We don't see a risk here because we already have the backlog. EBITDA in anything between 9.3% to 10.2%. And the idea is to try to get back to where we were back in 2020 before all the crisis. So I think we are moderately optimistic about the situation. And having said that, I'll pass it to Alex for the recap.
Well, thanks, Luis and Isone. We have seen the first half of the year. We have seen the numbers. Let me wrap a bit the presentation with the main conclusions and then go for the Q&A. Well, there you see in the last slide, first, the top line, it's supported by a strong electricity industry growth trends. Luis has already mentioned, and the market is strong. Despite the global situation, market is strong and with good long-term perspective. And we are seeing this growth in our order intake and sales. Q3, as I said, is also doing well. We are seeing a good market position. And what is good also is that most of this growth is just being, was just seen, and we will show up in the next months. We are also recovering margin, as Luis mentioned, and Sone, as a result of our strength in revenue, but also of a tight cost and price management strategy. So we are starting coming back to the, let's say, the normal margin that we should have and we looked at that year due to the supply chain situation. We have a clear target of growth, both organic and inorganic, and also with the goal of improving margin always. We work hard every day in order to improve the offer, our portfolio with new products and markets, and that's what we are doing. And it's also part of the inorganic strategy. As Luis just presented, ESG we have a long-standing commitment with ESG. It's something that is in our values since the beginning, during all these 75 years of history. And it's in the forefront of what we do every day. And at last, we have a clear focus on cash generation. And this is a key element also for shareholder value, but also for a disciplined approach to M&A. This year, we are especially focused on inventory reduction after 2 years of supply chain disruption that has made us to have higher than inventories that it used to be. So this is the presentation. All in, despite the uncertainty in which we are living now, we feel confident to give you guidance of what will be the result of the full year. As we said, we are seeing a top line and we are seeing margin recovery. So I think we are going back to the normal situation, and we are on track with the commitment that we have with the guidance that we give to the market. So with this, we conclude the presentation, and now we will be happy to answer your questions. Thanks for your attention, and let's wait for the questions.
Thank you. We will now start our Q&A session. If you would like to ask a question by phone, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also send your question through the webcast platform. And our first question comes from Alberto Esposin at JB Capital. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my questions. I have three, if I might. So first one on top line, from what I understood from the presentation, around 12 million euros of the growth came from Esitas. This means that you had double-digit organic growth, and I would like to understand how much of that growth was driven by volume and how much was due to higher prices. Second, on margins, you announced a new price recovery strategy, so I would like to know if you could provide a bit more visibility on how the negotiations with clients are going and if you are seeing any easing pressures on the cost side. Also, just a clarification, I understood that you expect to fully compensate cost pressures with prices by the fourth quarter of the year. Is this correct? And finally, on cash flow, I would like to know if you could please quantify by how much was net debt impacted by the extraordinary increase in inventories. So how much of the 9.9 million euros impact from working capital is from extraordinary inventory increase? Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Hello, Alberto. About the first question, which was the impact in the growth of prices and the impact of volume, I will say that more or less 20% is price and 80% is increase of volume.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
Okay, the second question was about the direct margin. As we have explained, if you remember, we our order intake has increased 50%, 51% within this half year, and our revenues have increased 21%. So this means that we are increasing our backlog, and this backlog has price increases. So we expect to see in the following months these price increases in our profit and loss, so the direct margin is going to continue growing and improving as we have seen in the last 3 months.
Yeah. Well, one thing that we like to explain is that our products have different delivery cycles, right? So out of the three pillars, the one on re-automation is the one with shortest delivery cycle, right? So that means that when we take when we implement the price action, we can see very quickly the result. So, for example, relays, which have deliveries of 3-4 weeks, once we implement the price increase, we can see the results in our P&L right away. So the first product line that where we were able to start recovering price was that one. It started last year. There are other product lines that we're talking about a few more weeks, a couple of months of deliveries, like medium voltage. That one, we are also seeing the results, probably since beginning of the year, especially in Q2, we see more and more. And the one who were struggling the most was the one of high voltage equipment. We have deliveries of 7 months, 4 or 5 months, and with frame agreements that we have to renegotiate, that we are starting to see results recently. And we will see more results as the end of the year. This is why we are saying in our calculation that we review every week that by the end of Q4, we will have more or less over 100%. Right? So I was mentioning in my presentation that last year we covered 40%. In the first half, we have covered 70%. And then by the end of the year, we think we will be covered 100%.
Okay, and the last question of Alberto was about the extraordinary impact of the inventories in the cash flow. If you remember, last year we said that we had like 7 million of extraordinary inventory levels, and more or less the increase during the half year has been the same, okay? This I have told before of you, but in this second part of the year we have a special focus on the inventory in order to generate positive cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everything very clear. Thank you.
Thanks to you for breaking the ice.
Thank you for your question. Our next question comes from Robert Jackson at Bank of Santander. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm going to ask a number of questions about one by one. So starting off with the order book, you have a very strong growth. Can you give us any idea of how much of this growth or what support you're getting from the structural changes that are occurring in the markets over the last few quarters? Is that supporting the order intake as well, and hence that will support further growth in the coming quarters? So all the energy disruption, is that affecting your order book?
Sorry, Robert, we couldn't follow completely the
you were breaking. Can you repeat it?
Yeah, so in the order book, there's a lot of structural changes in the energy sectors with renewables. You mentioned that you have renewables is supporting the growth. This growth is that, have you seen a stronger growth more specifically during this year than the last year, and hence the momentum there is going to be stronger in the coming quarters. Can you give us any idea of that support?
Okay. Well, just to give you a little bit of an idea, last week we spent some time in a conference in Paris, in Cigre, which is the biggest conference for the electrical sector worldwide, so around 4,000 delegates. And this is the conference where we have utilities, universities, suppliers, etc. And we're talking about this. And everybody is seeing, growth in the electrical sector higher than what we have already forecasted in our plans. So this is one thing. On top of that, I think that we are doing the right things. I think that some of the decisions that we took a couple of years ago, like having more capacity in our factories in Mexico, or having more capacity in our factory in China, I think it's paying back. So I would say that part of the growth is coming from the market itself, part of the growth is coming from our initiatives, and part of the growth is coming as well from price increases. So as you can imagine, a growth of 50% cannot be achieved just by one thing. So it's a combination of several things that are playing to our advantage at the same time. What is going to happen in the next month? That's the $1 million question. Based on our discussions and the presentations and in this conference I was mentioning before, it looks like it's going to remain like that. However, what's going to happen in Europe, for example, in the next 2-3 months with all these energy crises? So who knows? But right now the market is positive, and everybody's saying that there's going to be more investment needed.
Yeah. Robert, just completing what Luis just said, coming back with the analysis that we have done in the market and the information that we got from the Congress last week, it seems that all the trends that we have explained during the strategic plan presentation and also with other presentations that we did, the trends are stronger and even stronger now with all the things that are happening in the world. And it seems that in particular in the grid, the investment is doing is recovering part of the lack of investment that we have seen for decades. So it seems that if nothing happens, the long-term vision is strong, and the next months are going, we're going to see, still see a strong market. That is that is what most of the market thinks. So I think we are seeing a strong position. And as I said, as we said, also a good footprint, good market position. We are in the market, and we are taking advantage of this moment.
Okay. And going back to the you mentioned in terms of the order intake, Saudi Arabia is investing in high voltage. That's relatively new, and what's the reasoning behind that?
In high voltage, you mentioned?
Yes, in Saudi Arabia.
Well, if you take
what's
a look at the well, if you take a look at the numbers from Saudi Arabia, their GDP growth of this year is going to be, I think it's like something like 7 or 8%, which is the highest GDP growth rate in the last 11 years. Make a guess. What does Saudi Arabia does for a living? They sell oil. What happens with oil? Prices up. What do you need? More substations. And they were not investing much for the last 4 or 5 years. And now suddenly they are investing, and we are there to help.
And in North America, you mentioned the Biden infrastructure. North America has a very old infrastructure. Is the majority of that growth coming from the renewal of that infrastructure, or is there new investment opportunities there as well?
Well, everything is connected. I mean, just to make things possible, in general, the country's needs a flexible and digital and efficient grid. So as much as you invest in renewables, in electric vehicles and all the things that are coming into the market, as much as you need a more modernized grid, which in the case of the U.S. is not the case. So putting both things together, you need to renew the old grid that they have, but also adapt the grid to the new moments. So that means that the investment in the grid is being really high. And it's going to remain in the next month or years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then looking at the direct margin, the sales mix effect negative 2.2. What's that due to? In the direct margin bridge, year on year, why was there a negative sales mix effect?
The sales mix. Okay. Yeah. Well. Basically, you know that our products, they have a wide variation in margins, right? So we have products with 60% direct margin, and we have products with 25% direct margin, right? So depending on how they mix those, you can see one thing or the other. In this case, I think that we have increased quite significantly our numbers in railway in the first half of the year. And railway sector has lower margins than energy, okay? So that's one thing. I would say that there are other products that probably they are not showing up in the beginning of the year, but there is nothing really significant about the mix. So you know, $2.2 million mix on the figures that we are reporting of 150 is not really relevant.
Okay, and so does that explain why the network reliability, if I'm looking at the EBIT, is negative in this first half? If I look at the breakdown. Sorry?
Yes, it's impacted because the if you remember, last year we didn't grow in network reliability due to Latin America, LATAM, that was affected by the COVID, and we hadn't growth in volume in this business line. But during the first half of 2022, this market is recovering. We are getting orders for this market, and we hope that in the following month, with extra volume, this is going to go on positive numbers.
There's a couple of massive projects that we have won in the months of July and August in Australia and US for power quality, and that has to be delivered, later in the year. So I won't be worried for that.
Yeah, Robert, sorry. There's another question connected with the question you made about the market trends.
Mm-hmm.
Was related about Europe, which Repower Europe is going to help in this trends. Well, the answer is yes. Yes, Europe is strong in investment in our segment, both in renewables but also in grid connections. Not only for connecting the renewables but also to interconnect and countries, which is one of the key geopolitical issues that we are seeing now in Europe. So we are seeing this investment, and we think we are receiving this flow because Europe as a market is doing really well in this first half of the year, and also still strong in the third quarter. Now that's an answer to one question that was in the email.
Okay, and then just two more questions. In Brazil, WEG, one of your competitors, has built a new plant for power transformers. I guess that's not a risk for you because you're more on the relays, or is that are they going to be competitors with their new plant?
Yeah, I think WEG is a key competitor of us in Brazil. They have acquired a local company, but basically that company just basically changing names. So we were competing nicely against them already in the past. So. Yeah, they may have a little bit more financial muscle, but in terms of market coverage, we don't see a change.
But also, as you know, BEG is more beggy, as they said.
Beggy, yes. Beggy.
It's mainly power transformers. And they have a quite bad job. But in the power transformers, which is they have also increasing capacity, all the distribution of power transformers is... bottleneck in the capacity in many countries, and so the supply, the delivery is being so long, so that's why they are increasing capacity. As Luis mentioned, we took the decision some months ago, so now we in a particular field, which is an instrument, we have the capacity in order to supply the market, but it's a collapse in some products.
Yeah, but the picture in Brazil hasn't changed with WEG.
No,
there are three suppliers, mm-hmm. and we are supplying from Argentina or from China. Yeah. That's it. No change.
Okay. Okay. And then I was looking at Landis here, and they're moving into water metering in the UK, and then also EV charging. Is that something that you're looking at for the near future or longer term? Could that be interesting for you?
You mentioned Landis and Gear?
Yes, in the water metering.
Water metering, nothing to do, well, I shouldn't say so, because we're always taking a look at what is available over there in terms of inorganic acquisitions, but right now we don't have any interest or we don't have any presence in the water market.
No, Robert, the pipeline that we are seeing and we are working on in the inorganic growth is focusing in our business, basically the three pillars, and in general, anything which is connected with the new trends that are coming in the grid. We are not looking, actually, at least for water or
anything. Water and electricity don't mix well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much indeed for your answers. Very interesting.
Thank you for your question, Robert. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. At this time, there are no further telephone questions. We will now pass over to written questions.
Okay, this is Paloma Indiano, Investor Relations of the company. Just a quick wrap-up of the questions received over the written webcast. Some of them have already been answered by the management, but I will just tell those that haven't. First of all, they're asking if we are increasing prices all over the product portfolio.
Yeah. Well, basically we are segmentating, all the product lines by region, and we are making different decisions in each region. So I would say that we are not increasing prices all over the place at the same time. We are just selecting how much we can increase in each region, depending on the cost increases as well. But yeah, it's pretty much all over the place, but different.
Okay. What about the U.S. market? It says that the market was very strong before passing of Inflation Reduction Act. Is this going to further accelerate growth in the U.S. market?
Well, I think that the aim of the Inflation Reduction Act is basically to help production of domestic energy as a way of reducing inflation. So that means that we have to, that they have to invest in green energy and new installations. So we are starting to see some business coming out from renewables boost in the U.S. Our strategy is to supply from Mexico. So all the products that we are selling to U.S. are coming from our factories in Mexico. And even though there's a preference for local production in the U.S., Mexico has a special treatment in terms of commercial agreements because of NAFTA. And therefore, we are not seeing any issue in terms of being able to fulfill the requirements from the Act to sell our products. So far, so good.
Okay, some questions asking for 2023 guidance. I don't know how you feel just after giving guidance for the rest of 2022 year. So I don't think if that guidance is enough. I mean, we haven't been specific about 2023.
Well, we did our guidance for 2023 back in 2020, right? It was like December 2020, before all these situations that we have detected, right? So the world is totally different, has changed completely since we did that forecasting, let me say, that guidance. That guidance was divided between inorganic and organic, right? So organic, I think we're doing more or less well in terms of volume. Margin, we are suffering, even though we are recovering. And inorganically, we are doing, we have done three operations. We have more in the pipeline, and we still need to do a couple more in order to achieve those targets that we fulfill. So I would say that we may suffer a delay of some months or a year in terms of achieving our numbers in our strategic planning, but the basics remain the same. So.
Okay, yeah. One more, maybe Alex, you want to
speak? No, I was just to reinforce what Luis said. Yes, the basement of the business plan remain the same. We have been working on recovering the margins in the last months due to all the supply chain issues that we all know. Now we are seeing that the margin are coming back. We are seeing that we are going back to normal. And so on, with a strong top line and with good market trends, we think that the basis of the business plan is still the same, no change. And as Luis said, yes, we could see some months of delay in achieving the goals, but we remain confident with the guidance that we get to the market.
Okay, one more, maybe this one for Isone, it's very specific. What is your liquidity position in terms of cash and an equivalent and available credit lines at the end of the first semester of 2022? And expectations at the end of the year.
Okay, yes, we have financial lines available with our different financial sources amounting to 92 million euros. So we are confident in with this number, but we are working in our financial position for the future in the following months. But I think we are confident with this situation.
Okay, so these are more or less all the questions received. So the IR team is available for you for any additional questions you may have. And I hand over the word to Alex for him to close.
Well, thanks again for everybody for your time listening to us this morning. We are going to be on the show next week, in the following days, with Paloma and the ER team. So we will be available to address your questions. See you soon. Thanks for your support. And let's continue working hard in order to fulfill the commitment. Thanks again, and see you soon. Welcome to our first half 22 results presentation. And thanks for joining us today. As said, I'm Alex Arteta, I'm President and CEO of the company. And today, together with me, Luis Mari Pérez, Managing Director of the company, and Isone Vicente, CFO of Arteta. Well, before starting, I'm happy to share with you that last June, we celebrate our first year as a listed company. This is a very important milestone in our 75 years history. And now being a listed company, this reinforces our commitment on creating value for the shareholders. Well, let's go with the presentation. I will start with a global view of the highlights of this first half of the year, and then Luis and Isone will explain in detail the financials. Going to page three, first of all, we generate earning per share of 0.05, which is 57% higher than last year in this same period. And this is a result of higher sales volume and also disciplined financial management. Order intakes grew up to 192 million euros, which is going really well. It's more than 50% higher than same period last year, and also above the expected market growth. And this shows the good moment of the market and also a good position, market position and commercial strategy in order to take advantage of this good moment. Revenue also grew 21% versus previous last year, and it goes up to 156 million euros, despite the supply chain disruption and COVID issues that still remain in some countries. It's important you will see there that there's a difference, that we have an important backlog that we will see in the coming months. As I said, despite the supply chain constraint and also inflation, we managed to reach 13.1 million euros EBITDA this year, increasing the EBITDA from previous years with 23% previous half last year. And also, which is important, the margin improved a little bit from previous year and go up to 8.4% of revenues, which is also a result of the volume and also the margin recovery strategy that we are following very centered. DevNet stood at 54 million euros, which is equivalent to a leverage of 1.9 ratio EBITDA, DevNet EBITDA, versus 195 at December last year, which also shows the financial management that we are doing with the company. And last but not least, the inorganic growth, which is a key line in our strategic plan, is on track. Last year, since the IPO, we announced three transactions. All of them, they are running. The last one, which was announced in December last year, which is the GV with Touch Energy, with the focus of becoming the leaders in the eco-gas insulated transformers. It's now closed since May this year. Now it's running. So all of them, they are running well, and even synergies are ahead of what we expected or predicted at the beginning. And looking forward, we're still working on new operations, new transactions. We have a pipeline which is actually under analysis, and it's in line with the strategic goal that we have. In the next page, you have a resume of these numbers. We have already seen these numbers. I'm not going to go through them. The only comment is regarding the order intake. It remains strong during this good Q3 of the year. So it looks the market is still strong, so we have a potential to grow for the future. And you see here the net profit, which was not shown in the previous slide. It's reached 3 million euros, which is 77 higher than the same period last year. And this is equivalent to the 0.05 euros per share. And with this quick view of the first half, I will turn the word to Luis Mari, that will walk through the rest of the presentation.
Thanks, Alice, and good morning to everybody. So before we jump into the numbers, I would like to extend a big thank you to the Arteche team, because in these difficult times, their commitment makes a difference. What you can see in this slide, we can take a look at order intake and revenues, okay? So on the left side, we have the order intake. On the right side, we have the revenues, okay? Market trends remain strong. So all these, all the trends about electrification, decarbonization, digitization, and all that, they are playing to our advantage, okay? This is why you can see that in our four regions, let me remind you that we are organized in four regions, Europe, Middle East, Africa, North America, Latin America, and Asia Pacific. All four regions are growing, okay? And both in orders and sales. If you take a look at the orders first, you know, you will see that we have double-digit growth all across the globe, okay? And just to give a little bit of the highlights region by region, in the case of Europe, Middle East, Africa, I would like to point out that the renewable market in Southern Europe, Spain, Portugal, is really, really, really hot, let me say. Also, very important, after a few years of not a lot of activity, Saudi Arabia finally is investing quite a lot in high voltage, so we are benefiting from that as well. North America is booming, especially U.S., after the new policies in terms of renewables from the Biden administration, we have seen huge growth. You can see 78% and only 17% in sales because these products are typically long cycle, okay? Good situation with Mexico as well with some frame agreements that we have won over the first half of the year. Moving to South America, we can say that we have recovered from most of the effects that we were suffering in Brazil, Chile, and Argentina. So you can see the same trend even in Q3, in these 2 months of Q3, July and August, things are improving. And finally, in Asia Pacific, even though China's situation is still challenging because of COVID, we are seeing some good activity in countries like Vietnam, Laos, Pakistan, and Philippines. And as I was saying before, situation in the third quarter, in the first 2 months of the third quarter, remains similarly. So market is going to be strong, most likely for all year long. Moving to the next page, we can take a look let me call it the seasonality of our revenue. What you can see here is that Q2 has been much better than Q1 in terms of growth, okay? We are talking about 33% almost of growth in Q2 in comparison with 9% in Q1. If you take a look at what has happened in previous years in terms of relative size of the volume by quarter, you will see that the Q4 is typically the biggest in terms of size. So based on this, we predict that the volume is there for this year, and we are not going to have any major issue in terms of reaching our goals. And we will discuss later on in the last slide about this, okay? So positive in terms of growth. Now we're going to take a look at our situation from the product line point of view. So we have talked about geographies. Now we are going to be talking about products. Probably you will remind from other conferences that we are organized in three pillars. The first pillar is what we call measurement and monitoring systems, which are instrument transformers, mainly all the different technologies. Second one is transmission and distribution real automation, typically electronics. And the third one is network reliability, primary equipment, including capacitor banks, recorders, and other services. So the good news is that the three pillars are showing positive growth and double digits. So very nice picture to share with you. One thing to consider is that in the first pillar, the bigger one, the measurement and monitoring systems, the one with the 25% growth, here we are including the inorganic acquisitions from last year, CITAS. So if we exclude the CITAS from this picture, I would say that half of the growth is coming organically, half of the growth is coming inorganically, okay? Just to give a few hints about what we are doing in each of the three pillars without entering in details, in the pillar of measurement and monitoring, we have beaten the expected growth in our plan. Okay. There's a lot of activity about eco-friendly products, so we are investing quite heavily in all kinds of technologies that provide better carbon footprint. The integration of Visitas is going extremely well, so it has been received very well by the market and it's very successful. In the case of the second pillar, grid automation, we have achieved approvals in several countries in Asia after a couple of years of working homologations. And finally, about network reliability, well, I already pointed out Brazil, which is our biggest market for recloser, is back after COVID. And our new plant is up to speed in terms of deliveries. Okay. I'm going to shift gears now, and I'm going to be talking about direct margin. Okay. Direct margin has been a hot topic in previous presentations. You guys remember we have been talking about raw material increases, logistics increases, and what actions we are going to be taking in order to counteract those situations. What you can see in the slide on the left side, you can see a change of trend that took place in the month of March and April. In that change of trend I was referring, we can see that the margin is picking up. And this is because of all the actions that we have been taking in terms of achieving productivity, cost out, and price recovery. You can have more details on the right side of the page. Where we have the waterfall on margin comparing the direct margin for the first half of 21 to the second half of 22. You see that the volume is helping us, of course. Sales mix is hurting a little bit. Exchange rate between the currencies is also helping a little bit. And then I would like to draw your attention to the last two columns, the one on material and logistic cost increases and the one on price recovery. If you remember, back in December 21st, the ratio between the recovery and the cost increases was probably around 40%. So we could only recover like 40% of the cost increases. Now we're talking about 70%, and before the end of Q4, we're going to be at 100%. So in other words, all the actions that we have been taking in terms of, achieving price increases from the market, in terms of doing cost out reductions, in terms of suppliers, in terms of logistics, are paying back, and we are starting to see in our profit and loss statement. As a consequence of this, EBITDA, Alex already mentioned it, EBITDA has increased at 23% in comparison with the previous year. Just to give a little bit of perspective, back in 2021, full year, our EBITDA was 9.3%. So 8.3% in the first half, full year 9.3. So second half is a little bit stronger in terms of EBITDA creation. If I go 1 year back, in 2020, EBITDA was 11.3 full year, 8.3 first half, 11.3 in the full year. So what we're seeing here is 8.4% in the first half, a little bit better than both 2020 and 2021, and our expectations is that it's going to improve a little bit as well in the second half of the year. Where are we going to be? We'll talk about in the last page, okay? And now I'm going to hand the presentation to our CFO, Ixone, so yours.
Thank you, Ismail. On page 10, we saw a bridge that goes from the EBIT to the net income, and it shows the improvement in the different lines of the profit and loss accounts, financial results, income tax, reaching a net profit of 3 million euros, which grows 77% comparing with previous year. This means earning per share of 0.05 euros. I would like to remind you that last July we remunerated our shareholders. We distributed a dividend amounting to 2.5 million euros, which is a 30% payout of
last year results. Turning to next page 11, we have here the net financial debt. The first thing I would like to remark is the leverage ratio improvement that goes from 1.95 last year to 1.9 times EBITDA at June 2022. On absolute terms, the net EBITDA at June 2022 was 554.3 million euros. And here we have a waterfall that explains the variation. Starting with the reported EBITDA, which is 13.1 million euros, one of the most important negative cash outflow is the CAPEX. We have here the operating maintenance CAPEX that is less than 3% of our revenues, in line with our guidance. Then we have the financial results, which are improving comparing with last year. They represent 1.2% of our revenues, as well as tax expenses that are equivalent to 1%. Then we have the working capital. Working capital requirement has been higher than a year ago, and the main reason are the inventories. The last 18 months we've been working in a difficult and extraordinary economic environment, and we have increased our inventory levels in order not to disturb the supply chain of our customers and to avoid stops in our factory productions. The second half of the year, we have a clear focus on cash flow generation, especially looking to the inventory levels. And to finish with the waterfall, we have the positive impact of the exchange rate and the negative cash flow coming from the inorganic operation. Here we have the second payment of the CITAS and the positive cash flow of the joint venture with Hitachi Energy. In the right side, we have the gross financial debt breakdown by sources. We've been working last year to reinforce our debt balances and also in the diversification of our financial sources, as you can see in the chart. It's important to remark also that the 70% of our total long-term loans are hedged against the risk interest rate. And finally, our debt financial position has been reinforced during this half of the year, maintaining a leverage ratio of less than 2.5. And now I will return the word to Luis Mari to continue with the presentation.
Thanks, Sonia. So now we're going to talk about our ESG strategy. You have heard us saying many times that ESG is deep into our DNA and that we are working on this kind of activities for many years, maybe with different terminology, but with the same principles. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a summary about what we have done in these 6 months. So in terms of environment, we have been working hard in terms of reducing the greenhouse gases emissions. We also have invested quite a lot of time in reducing our energy consumption, so especially nowadays with the price of electricity and gas, this pays back quickly. And also we have launched initiatives to reduce our waste. Okay? I would like to remark that we have received an award in terms of designing our R&D products with some bio-friendly gases, okay, and liquids. Socially, we are working hard on trying to increase the percentage of female hired. As you can imagine, our industry, electrical engineering, there's a lot of male components, okay, and there's room for improvement, but we're working on reducing that gap. Also, we have increased the number of women in management positions 2%, and we have worked as well on the turnover rate of our employees in order to reduce the unwanted leaves. We finalized with a big success the Solidarity Run. You may recall the idea is to help some disadvantaged families paying the electricity bill. And we had 720 participants in 20 countries. And we would like to thank our supporters that you can see them at the bottom of the page. Finally, in terms of governance, we are working on the internal controls. We have launched our 2030 sustainability roadmap. We have also finalized our corporate governance roadmap, and we have finally introduced all the risk management, not only at functional level, but also at regional level. So that is really now embedded into our processes. Finally, we also received two sustainability awards, on good governance and in the energy sector. So very, very interesting, very active first half of the year. Okay, so now we're talking about future, right? So until now we have been talking about what has happened. We are providing all the explanations, details, financials, metrics, KPIs, all that. Now we have to tell you how do we see the rest of the year. What you can see in the slide is, first of all, we are talking about revenue and EBITDA. We are talking about what has happened in 2021, what is happening in the last 12 months in the column in the middle, and what is our outlook for the full year. And keeping into consideration that there's a lot of volatility and uncertainty nowadays, we are giving a little bit of a range, okay, of what's going to happen, okay? Highlights. So first of all, you have heard us saying that the market is very strong, okay? Just read the news. Countries and companies are investing more in electricity, interconnections, decarbonization, so all those things are good for our PC business. Our position, our footprint is well aligned with these needs because geographically we are located all over the place, and because we're doing the right things in terms of product development and commercial activities. So that's good. Our model is resilient. So finally, after a lot of months of hard work, we're starting to see the results of our price recovery actions. First, we saw it in the short cycle product lines, like relays and medium voltage. And finally, now we are seeing it as well in the high voltage. Also, the cost-saving activities with the change of logistics from Asia to Europe and some of the changes that we have implemented in the design of the products are working to our advantage. On the negative side, still there are some supply chain disruptions. Electronics are critical nowadays, energy, logistics, COVID in China. So still there's a little bit of a degree that make us have a little bit of a wide range in terms of our outlook. But what you can see in this slide is, in terms of volume, something between 325 to 340. We don't see a risk here because we already have the backlog. EBITDA in anything between 9.3% to 10.2%. And the idea is to try to get back to where we were back in 2020 before all the crisis. So I think we are moderately optimistic about the situation. And having said that, I'll pass it to Alex for the recap.
Well, thanks, Luis and Isone. We have seen the first half of the year. We have seen the numbers. Let me wrap a bit the presentation with the main conclusions and then go for the Q&A. Well, there you see in the last slide, first, the top line, it's supported by a strong electricity industry growth trends. Luis has already mentioned, and the market is strong. Despite the global situation, market is strong and with good long-term perspective. And we are seeing this growth in our order intake and sales. Q3, as I said, is also doing well. We are seeing a good market position. And what is good also is that most of this growth is just being, was just seen, and we will show up in the next months. We are also recovering margin, as Luis mentioned, and Sone, as a result of our strength in revenue, but also of a tight cost and price management strategy. So we are starting coming back to the, let's say, the normal margin that we should have, and we lost that year due to the supply chain situation. We have a clear target of growth, both organic and inorganic, and also with the goal of improving margin always. We work hard every day in order to improve the offer, our portfolio with new products and markets, and that's what we are doing, and it's also part of the inorganic strategy. As Luis just presented, ESG is, we have a long-standing commitment with ESG. It's something that is in our values since the beginning, during all these 75 years of history, and it's in the forefront of what we do every day. And last, we have a clear focus on cash generation, and this is a key element also for shareholder value, but also for a disciplined approach to M&A. This year, we are especially focused on inventory reduction after 2 years of supply chain disruption that has made us to have higher than inventories that it used to be. So this is the presentation. All in, despite the uncertainty in which we are living now, we feel confident to give you guidance of what will be the result of the full year. And as we said, we are seeing a top line and we are seeing margin recovery. So I think we are going back to the normal situation, and we are on track with the commitment that we have with the guidance that we give to the market. So with this, we conclude the presentation, and now we will be happy to answer your questions. Thanks for your attention, and let's wait for the questions.
Thank you. We will now start our Q&A session. If you would like to ask a question by phone, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also send your question through the webcast platform. And our first question comes from Alberto Espolsin at JB Capital. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my questions. I have three, if I might. So first one on top line, from what I understood from the presentation, around 12 million euros of the growth came from Esitas. This means that you had double-digit organic growth, and I would like to understand how much of that growth was driven by volume and how much was due to higher prices. Second, on margins, you announced a new price recovery strategy, so I would like to know if you could provide a bit more visibility on how the negotiations with clients are going and if you are seeing any easing pressures on the cost side. Also, just a clarification, I understood that you expect to fully compensate cost pressures with prices by the fourth quarter of the year. Is this correct? And finally, on cash flow, I would like to know if you could please quantify by how much was net debt impacted by the extraordinary increase in inventories. So how much of the 9.9 million euros impact from working capital is from extraordinary inventory increase? Thank you.
Okay. Hello, Alberto. About the first question, which was the impact in the growth of prices and the impact of volume, I will say that more or less 20% is price and 80% is increase of volume.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
Okay, the second question was about the direct margin. As we have explained, if you remember, we our order intake has increased 50%, 51% within this half year, and our revenues have increased 21%. So this means that we are increasing our backlog, and this backlog has price increases. So we expect to see in the following months these price increases in our profit and loss, so the direct margin is going to continue growing and improving,
as we have seen in the last 3 months.
Yeah. Well, one thing that we like to explain is that our products have different delivery cycles, right? So out of the three pillars, the one on grid automation is the one with shortest delivery cycle, right? So that means that when we take when we implement the price action, we can see very quickly the result. So for example, relays, which have deliveries of 3-4 weeks, once we implement the price increase, we can see the results in our P&L right away. So the first product line that where we were able to start recovering price was that one. It started last year. Then there are other product lines that we're talking about a few more weeks, a couple of months of deliveries, like medium voltage. That one, we are also seeing the results, probably since beginning of the year, especially in Q2, we see more and more. And the one who were struggling the most was the one of high voltage equipment. We have deliveries of 7 months, 4 or 5 months, and with frame agreements that we have to renegotiate, that we are starting to see results recently. And we will see more results as the end of the year. This is why we are saying in our calculation that we review every week that by the end of Q2, Q4, we will have more or less over 100%. Right? So I was mentioning in my presentation that last year we covered 40%. In the first half, we have covered 70%. And then by the end of the year, we think we will be covered 100%.
Okay. And the last question of Alberto was about the extraordinary impact of the inventories in the cash flow. If you remember, last year we said that we had like 7 million of extraordinary inventory levels, and more or less the increase during the half year has been the same, okay? This I have told before of you, but in this second part of the year we have a special focus on the inventory in order to generate positive cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay, everything very clear. Thank you.
Thanks to you for breaking the ice.
Thank you for your question. Our next question comes from Robert Jackson at Bank of Santander. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm going to ask a number of questions about one by one. So starting off with the order book, you had a very strong growth. Can you give us any idea of how much of this growth or what support you're getting from the structural changes that are occurring in the markets over the last few quarters? Is that supporting the order intake as well, and hence that will support further growth in the coming quarters? So all the energy disruption, is that affecting your order book?
Sorry, Robert, we couldn't follow completely the
question. Yeah, you were breaking. Can you repeat it?
Yeah, so in the order book, there's a lot of structural changes in the energy sectors. With renewables, you mentioned that you have renewables is supporting the growth. This growth, is that, have you seen a stronger growth more specifically during this year than the last year, and hence the momentum there is going to be stronger in the coming quarters? Can you give us an idea of that support?
Okay. Well, just to give you a little bit of an idea, last week we spent some time in a conference in Paris, in Sigre, which is the biggest conference for the electrical sector worldwide, so around 4,000 delegates. And this is a conference where we have utilities, universities, suppliers, etc. And we're talking about this. And everybody is seeing, growth in the electrical sector higher than what we have already forecasted in our plans. So this is one thing. On top of that, I think that we are doing the right things. I think that some of the decisions that we took a couple of years ago, like having more capacity in our factories in Mexico, or having more capacity in our factory in China, I think it's paying back. So I would say that part of the growth is coming from the market itself, part of the growth is coming from our initiatives, and part of the growth is coming as well from price increases. So as you can imagine, a growth of 50% cannot be achieved just by one thing. So it's a combination of several things that are playing to our advantage at the same time. What is going to happen in the next month? That's the $1 million question. based on our discussions and the presentations and in this conference I was mentioning before, it looks like it's going to remain like that. However, what's going to happen in Europe, for example, in the next 2-3 months with all these energy crises? So who knows? But right now the market is positive, and everybody's saying that there's going to be more investment needed.
Yeah. Robert, just completing what Luis just said, coming back with the analysis that we have done in the market and the information that we got from the Congress last week, it seems that all the trends that we have explained during the strategic plan presentation and also with other presentations that we did, the trends are stronger and even stronger now with all the things that are happening in the world. And it seems that in particular in the grid, the investment is doing is recovering part of the lack of investment that we have seen for decades. So it seems that if nothing happens, the long-term vision is strong, and the next months we are going to still see a strong market. That is that is what most of the market thinks. So I think we are seeing a strong position. And as we said, also. Good footprint, good market position. We are in the market, and we are taking advantage of this moment.
Okay. And going back to the you mentioned in terms of the order intake, Saudi Arabia is investing in high voltage. Is that relatively new, and what's the reasoning behind that?
In high voltage, you mentioned.
Yes, in Saudi Arabia.
If you take a look at the numbers from Saudi Arabia, their GDP growth of this year is going to be, I think it's like something like 7 or 8%, which is the highest GDP growth rate in the last 11 years. Make a guess. What does Saudi Arabia do for a living? They sell oil. What happens with oil? Prices up. What do you need? More substations, and they were not investing much for the last 4 or 5 years, and now suddenly they are investing, and we are there to help.
And in North America, you mentioned the Biden infrastructure. North America has a very old infrastructure. Is the majority of that growth coming from the renewal of that infrastructure, or is there new investment opportunities there as well?
Well, everything is connected. I mean, just to make things possible, in general, the country's needs a flexible and digital and efficient grid. So, as much as you invest in renewables, in electric vehicles and all the things that are coming into the market, as much as you need a more modernized grid, which in the case of the U.S. is not the case. So putting both things together, you need to renew the old grid that they have, but also adapt the grid to the new moments. So that means that the investment in the grid is being really high, and it's going to remain in the next month or years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then looking at the direct margin, the sales mix effect negative 2.2. What's that due to? In the direct margin bridge, year on year, why was there a negative sales mix effect?
The sales mix. Okay. Yeah. Well, basically, you know that our products they have a wide variation in margins. Right, so we have products with 60% direct margin, and we have products with 25% direct margin, right? So depending on how the mix goes, you can see one thing or the other. In this case, I think that we have increased quite significantly our numbers in railway in the first half of the year. And railway sector has lower margins than energy, okay? So that's one thing. I would say that there are other products that probably they are not showing up in the beginning of the year, but there is nothing really significant about the mix. So, you know, $2.2 million mix on the figures that we are reporting of 100, 150 is not really relevant.
OK. Okay. And so does that explain why the network reliability, if I'm looking at the EBIT, is negative in this first half?
The network reliability, yeah.
If I look at the break-
You
Yeah, if I look at the breakdown.
You grew early.
Sorry?
Yes. Yes, it's impacted because if you remember, last year, we didn't grow in network reliability due to Latin America, LATAM, that was affected by the COVID, and we hadn't growth in volume in this business line. But during the first half of 2022, this market is recovering. We are getting orders for this market, and we hope that in the following months, with extra volume, this is going to go on positive numbers.
There's a couple of massive projects we have won in the months of July and August in Australia and U.S. for power quality, and that has to be delivered, you know, later in the year. So I won't be worried with that.
Yeah, Robert, sorry. There's another question to, connected with the question you made about the market trends.
Mm-hmm.
Was related with about Europe, which REPowerEU is going to help in this trends. Well, the answer is yes. Yes, Europe is strong in investment in our segment, both in renewables but also in grid connections. Not only for connecting the renewables, but also for to interconnect different countries, which is one of the key geopolitical issues that we are seeing now in Europe. So we are seeing this investment, and we are receiving. We think we are receiving this flow because Europe as a market is doing really well in this first half of the year, and also still strong in the third quarter. Now that's an answer to one question that was in an email.
Okay, and then just two more questions. In Brazil, WEG, one of your competitors, has built a new plant for power transformers. I guess that's not a risk for you because you're more on the relays, or are they going to be competitors in that with their new plant?
Yeah, I think WEG is a key competitor of us. In Brazil, they have acquired a local company, and but basically that company is just basically changing names. So we were competing nicely against them already in the past. So yeah, they may have a little bit more financial muscle, but in terms of market coverage, we don't see a change.
But also, as you know, WEG is more baggy, as they said.
Baggy.
It's mainly power transformers.
Yeah,
they have a quite backup. But in the power transformer, which is they have also increasing capacity, all the distribution and power transformers is a bottleneck in the capacity in many countries. And so the supply, the delivery is been so long. So that's why they are increasing capacity. As Luis mentioned, we took the decision some months ago. So now we in a particular field, which is an instrument, we have the capacity in order to to supply the market. But it's a collapse in some products.
Yeah, but the picture in Brazil hasn't changed with WEG.
No.
There are three local suppliers. Mm-hmm. And we are supplying from Argentina or from China. That's it. No change.
Okay. Okay. And then I was looking at the Landis Gear and they're moving into water metering in the UK, and then also EV charging. Is that something that you're looking at for the near future or longer term? Could that be interesting for you?
You mentioned Landis and Gear.
Yes, in the water metering.
Water metering, nothing to do. Well, I shouldn't say so. We're always taking a look at what is available over there in terms of inorganic acquisitions. But right now, we don't have any interest, or we don't have any presence in the water market.
No, Robert. The pipeline that we are seeing and we are working on in the inorganic growth is focusing in our business, basically the three pillars, and in general, anything which is connected with the new trends that are coming in the grid. We are not looking, actually, at least for water or
energy. Water and electricity don't mix well.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much indeed for your answers. Very interesting.
Thank you for your question, Robert. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. At this time, there are no further telephone questions. We will now pass over to written questions.
Okay, this is Paloma Indiano, Investor Relations of the company. Just a quick wrap-up of the questions received over the written webcast. Some of them have already been answered by the management. But I will just tell those that haven't. First of all, they're asking if we are increasing prices all over the product portfolio.
Yeah. Well, basically we are segmentating all the product lines by region, and we are making different decisions in each region. So I would say that we are not increasing prices all over the place at the same time. We are just selecting how much we can increase in each region, depending on the cost increase as well. But yeah, it's pretty much all over the place, but different.
Okay. What about the U.S. market? It says that the market was very strong before passing of Inflation Reduction Act. Is this going to further accelerate growth in the U.S. market?
Well, I think that the aim of the Inflation Reduction Act is basically to help production of domestic energy as a way of reducing inflation. So that means that they have to invest in green energy and new installations. So we are starting to see some business coming out from renewables boost in the U.S. Our strategy is to supply from Mexico. So all the products that we are selling to U.S. are coming from our factories in Mexico. And even though there's a preference for local production in the U.S., Mexico has a special treatment in terms of commercial agreements because of NAFTA, and therefore we are not seeing any issue in terms of being able to fulfill the requirements from the Act to sell our products. So far, so good.
Okay, some questions asking for 2023 guidance. I don't know how you feel just after giving guidance for the rest of 2022 year. So I don't think if that guidance is enough. I mean, we haven't been specific about 2023.
Well, we did our guidance for 2023 back in 2020, right? It was like December 2020, before all these situations that we have detected, right? So the world is totally different, has changed completely since we did that forecasting, let me say, that guidance. That guidance was divided between inorganic and organic, right? So organic, I think we're doing more or less well in terms of volume. Margin, we are suffering, even though we are recovering. And inorganically, we are doing, we have done 3 operations. We have more in the pipeline, and we still need to do a couple more in order to achieve those targets that we fulfill. So I would say that we may suffer a delay of some months or a year in terms of achieving our numbers in our strategic planning, but the basics remain the same. So.
Okay, one more, maybe Alex, you want to
say? No, I was just to reinforce what Luis said. Yes, the basement of the business plan remain the same. We have been working on recovering the margins in the last months due to all the supply chain issues that we all know. Now we are seeing that the margin are coming back. We are seeing that we are going back to normal, and so on with a strong top line and with good market trends. We think that the basis of the business plan is still the same, with no change. And as Luis said, yes, we could see some months of delay in achieving the goals, but we remain confident with the guidance that we get to the market.
Okay, one more maybe good one for Isone, just very specific. What is your liquidity position in terms of cash and an equivalent and available credit lines at the end of the first semester of 2022 and expectations at the end of the year?
Okay, yes, we have we have financial lines available with our different financial sources amounting to 92 million euros. So we are confident in with this number, but we are working in our financial position for the future in the following months. But I think we are confident with this situation.
Okay, so these are more of the questions received. So the IR team is available for you for any additional questions you may have. And I hand over the word to Alex for him to close.
Well, thanks again for your time listening to us this morning. We are going to be on the show next week, in the following days, with Paloma and the IR team. So we will be available to address your questions. See you soon. Thanks for your support. And let's continue working hard in order to fulfill the commitment. Thanks again, and see you soon.